You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Megève.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in the finishing straight in Megève at the end of the time trial, right next to the finish line, probably 5 metres away.
Literally, less than that, about a metre and a half away from the finish line.
I'd say 5 metres.
But even closer to the Portaluz.
We are very close to the Portaluz. Bit of a theme this year on the Tour de France, isn't it? We podcasted near the bins, now we're podcasting near the Portaluz. But we are overlooked by the glorious mountains. Megève, lovely, lovely town, isn't it? And it really feels like a festival atmosphere, because on Saturday morning a stage starts here as well. So there's a real sort of sense that the Tour de France is set up for the weekend.
And we've been watching today's mountain time trial. It's nearing its closing stage now. We saw Richie Port there out in the course. Is that Louis Menkes coming into the finish? A lot of guys overshot one of those final corners, which has led to some amusing footage. Even the riders themselves who've overshot the corner found it amusing. Jeremy Roy was one of them, and he tweeted it.
Yeah, Oliver Nason of I Am Cycling went right over the barriers, didn't he, and into the crowd a little bit.
A bit spectacular. So Richie Port is out. Chris Froome is out in the course as well. That's the sign of Louis Menkes coming in. He won't trouble the leaderboard, I don't think. Tom Dumoulin is current leader. He doesn't think that's going to be good enough to win.
No. Well, it's just after 5 o'clock here, and the story of the day so far, the main leaders of the time trial in chronological order, Jérôme Coppel, the Frenchman, he was quickest for quite a while until his time was beaten by Jon Izagirre of Movistar. And then Izagirre was toppled by Thomas de Gendt, stage winner a few days ago, Lotto Soudal rider, of course. And then Tom Dumoulin really blasted round the course, setting the best time. But in his interview immediately after the finish, he thought that Chris Froome would beat him. So it's probably going to be a race between those two, isn't it? Froome and Dumoulin.
He's been sitting in the hot seat for a while, Dumoulin. It really is hot. It's extremely hot today. When Dumoulin came in, I was standing just beyond the finish line, and Simon Jones, who's on research and development at Team Sky, he was there, and he went scampering after Dumoulin with his little camera, taking pictures of his bike, which I thought was interesting. I asked him what he would hope to learn. He said, well, you're almost keeping an eye out, aren't you? He said, they're good bikes, those giants, he said, but quite heavy. Now, Froome is on a new time trial bike today, and the equipment choice, absolutely critical today, I would think. It's a technical course with the climb quite short, 17 kilometres, not that steep a climb. Again, Simon Jones was talking about that, you know, if you take it overall, the gradient isn't too severe, and so they've obviously gambled on a time trial bike. I think that's the best thing. Now, I spoke to Steph Clement at the finish line. He was yesterday's Pedaleur de Charme. Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring Pedaleur de Charme. I gave him his T-shirt. We'll post that picture tomorrow. But I also asked him about the course. He was riding a road bike with a disc wheel, as a few riders have done. I asked him about the course and about that question of equipment choice.
Pedaleur de Charme, being so crooked on a bike like me. Okay.
Steph, how was the time trial there? How was the course? Who do you think it'll suit?
The obvious names, Dumoulin, Froome, Richie Port. It's going to be interesting, because I know that Richie is going for the setup like me, with a normal bike. And Froome will use his new time trial bike, which is supposed to be 7.2 kilos. Maybe you have a bigger advantage with the aerodynamics. So
how do you feel having ridden it? Because you've got a disc wheel at the back. How do you feel having ridden it, that you made the right decision?
I made the right decision out of the choices that I had. Our time trial bike is not possible to put it under 8 kilos. And then you have to drag up a kilo more the whole course. So I made the right choice in the materials that we have for us.
How critical do you think that will be, equipment choice today?
Among the favourites, it's going to be critical. And I think Sky did, as usual, their homework, and probably Froome has the best possible materials. But we saw yesterday that Richie was super strong, so he won already some of those time trials called airs in Paris-Nice, so for me he's the outsider today.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Yes, thank you very much to Eurosport. They sponsor our daily Pedaleur de Charme Award. Always tricky on a time trial day, isn't it? Maybe it'll be one of those guys who went over the barriers. Jeremy Roy went close the other day, but we're speaking as the stage is going on, so the nominations will be flooding in, and we don't know yet who will be today's Pedaleur de Charme. Anyway, we've fallen a little bit behind in the presentation of T-shirts. Julien Alaphilippe, he's been up there for Pedaleur de Charme several days. He's ridden this race, his debut tour, with a real joie de vivre. He's clearly enjoyed himself. And I went and found him after he finished the time trial, gave him his T-shirt, and had a quick chat with him. Interesting, as I came away from that little presentation, and he insisted on being presented with the T-shirt in the company of his team's press officer, Alessandro Tenier. And he just kept saying, "I love this man, I love this man." And he insisted on him being in the picture with him. As I walked away, an Englishman came up to me and said, "Oh, I feel I've just witnessed history in the making," he said, on seeing the Pedaleur de Charme T-shirt being awarded. Anyway, here's what Julien Alaphilippe had to say at the finish. You seem to have enjoyed your first Tour de France.
I really enjoy all the time, also when it's really hard, because, you know, it's my first big tour, especially here in France for a French guy. And when you are in a big team with a lot of ambition, you do your job with a lot of pleasure. And I'm really happy to discover the Tour de France.
You've learned a lot as well?
Yeah.
You've learned a lot?
Yeah, a lot, every day. It's really special for me, for my first Tour de France.
You seem to have every day been on the attack, been aggressive. Have you just enjoyed the racing every day?
I race like if there is not day after. I give all what I have. I give my all. I hope it. I help my team, and I do something good. So I don't want to finish the Tour de France with regret. My first goal, for sure, it's to be honest, to finish and to be happy. And my team are happy than me.
Well, you can be happy. You're a Pedaleur de Charme.
The cycling have a lot of charm, so I hope we have charm.
That was Julien Alaphilippe, and there was a bit of activity in the crowd there, Lionel.
Yeah, well, Alaphilippe's teammate Dan Martin of Etix Quickstep has just come in, I think sixth fastest time at this point. As you would expect, the overall GC riders are doing pretty well on this course, because the hill, although not a mountain, it's a tough old climb. It's, of course, the hill that was very famously part of the 1980 World Championship course. It comes out, rises out of Sallanches and comes towards Megève here, and it's where Bernardino really, he stamped his authority all over that race. And it's fitting, isn't it, that this is Bernardino's final Tour de France as part of the ASO organisation. He's stepping down from the podium at the end of this tour, and they're sort of honouring Eno's place as one of the five-time winners by including one of the climbs that is synonymous
that
with
his
name.
Made his legend. I can't believe he didn't plug our kilometre zero from yesterday, the Badger, which was our little show. The Badger was a little show about Bernardino, with interviews with David Walsh, William Fotheringham, and the Le Mans, Cathy and Greg, as well as Eno himself, who said that he will return to watch the tour with his grandson, but he won't take the place of a guest. He will stand by the side of the road. Very Eno kind of sentiment, that. You mentioned Sallanches in 1980. That is one of the famous races in Eno's palmarès. He had abandoned the Tour de France that year with a knee injury while in the yellow jersey, which is a very unusual thing to do. He sort of sneaked off at the dead of night. He was presented with the jersey, didn't tell the journalists or anybody that he was not starting the next day, sneaked off just after all the newspapers had gone to press. That's what happened in those days. Went and saw the tour organisation quietly and told them he was leaving, and sneaked off, and the journalists were not very happy, followed him all the way home to Brittany. But that was the Badger for you, and this looks like Fabio Aru.
Well, Fabio Aru's done a great ride. He's second on the finish line behind Tom Dumoulin at the moment. Really sprinted for the line, the Astana rider. A pretty good ride, and as Ciro said in yesterday's podcast, Aru now is trying to move as high up the overall classification as he can between now and Paris, you know, and top five is certainly not out of the question. But just the thing about time trial days is that riders are going through checkpoints throughout the course, particularly when it's a short day like this, 17 kilometres. So the picture is changing all the time. And we've just seen the news that Richie Porte has gone through the first checkpoint at 6.5 kilometres in the fastest time. And Adam Yates is third fastest there at the moment. So a blistering start by both Porte and Yates. And perhaps not such a blistering start by Nairo Quintana, who's gone through the second checkpoint in about 10th or 11th place, I think that was.
How's Balcomolama getting on? Any word on him?
Well, Balcomolama has not yet gone through the first checkpoint. He may well have done, but it hasn't come up on the live results.
He'll not be far away from it then, because obviously he was starting just behind Adam Yates. I guess his time will come through any minute. There's Chris Froome out on the course. Well, I mean, as Steph Clements said, it was Richie Porte that he tipped for today. He thought he was going to do a very good ride. Porte is riding for the podium. He's clearly one of the men in form. I think, you know, the podium could be Richie Porte. It's still within his reach, isn't it? And where would Richie Porte be had he not lost a minute 41 with his puncture?
A minute 45, wasn't it? Yeah, I think he'd be in third place at the moment if he had not lost that time. And I think we were a little critical. I certainly was a little critical of BMC's tactics. Richie Porte obviously lost that time, which seemed to give TJ Van Garderen the upper hand in the BMC racing team. We were a little bit sceptical about Porte's tactics in the mountains last week. He's proving this week that he is not only by far the strongest rider in BMC. I mean, TJ Van Garderen's had a shocker in the first day of the Alps. But Richie Porte is climbing extremely well, and he's being aggressive. He's showing a willingness to, you know, attack and try and pinch back time. It would have been really interesting to see how Porte would have been a factor in this race had he not lost that time with a puncture at wherever it was in the first week. It was Angers, was it, the first week? I can't remember which day it was now, but he lost a minute 45 because of a very untimely puncture.
Was it not on day two? Was it not the second stage? I mean, we're just speaking off the top of our heads here. I will take issue with your the suggestion that Richie Porte is never not aggressive. He's quite aggressive, quite an aggressive little chap, isn't he?
I don't know about that. He's always very polite, isn't he? He's just forthright, I think.
He's very forthright. Maybe that's what I mean. He's certainly somebody who's not shy of expressing his opinion.
No, but he's not needlessly aggressive. I must say, the day he lost that time in the puncture, and it was terrible timing because it was right when the race was on and towards the end, and there really wasn't much that BMC could have done to help him. He was very philosophical about it. I mean, his Tour de France was wrecked on that day, but he took it really calmly and very well. And I think, you know, he has got a kind of Grand Tour rider's temperament. But, you know, it's a shame for him, but the podium is not out of reach for him.
It's interesting, isn't it, Lionel? Because you say that he's got a Grand Tour temperament. The one time he's been the undisputed leader in a team, which was at the Giro last year when he was at Team Sky, and he had the motorhome and everything. Yeah, things went wrong for him. You know, he had a puncture at a very inopportune time. He took a wheel change from Simon Clark that day, who was not his teammate at the time, and that earned him a little penalty. But things, he seemed to crack there. He fell ill, and similarly in 2014 when Chris Froome crashed out and Richie Porte assumed leadership of Team Sky, the pressure seemed to get to him, and I wonder if this time around he's been able to just ride into the role, because he's not come here with that pressure of being number one, having joint leadership with TJ Van Garderen. Maybe took a bit of the pressure off, and without that responsibility, he's been able to just find himself as the race has gone on. He's only 2 kilometres away from the finish now.
Yeah, and I think it can't be understated how different it is to lose time as a result of a mechanical problem compared to losing time because your legs weren't good enough. And his legs have been good enough pretty much every time, haven't they? Whenever they've been climbing or time trialling, he's been well placed. So maybe confidence is high, and we're seeing the best of him.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
We're watching Richie Porte now coming towards the finish. Tom Dumoulin in the hot seat looking very anxiously at the screen. Richie Porte really flying into the finish here. We're about to find out his time, I guess. He's looking very quick. Hope he doesn't overshoot that corner.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming in on the drops, isn't he? He's riding no disc wheels. Looks like a standard road bike, just with some clip-on bars. So that's his choice of equipment. And
well, if you'd been listening to Steph Clement earlier, Lionel, you would know, huh?
Well, of course, I haven't been able to listen to Steph Clement, have I? Because we're podcasting as if live. I mean, you know, that's the big challenge today. But he's just gone outside Tom Dumoulin's time. So the Dutchman is still top of the leaderboard with however many holes left to play. Richie Port, though, good ride.
Very good ride, very good ride. There's a little delay, isn't there, on the screen? What we're seeing on the screen is happening just nanoseconds after. So there's a little cheer goes, a ripple in the audience goes along, and then we can see it on the screen. Here's Bauke Mollema now. I should say a big thank you to Rafa for sponsoring us at the Tour de France. You heard their message there, and a reminder that you can follow Rafa's coverage of the Tour de France at More Than a Race. If you go to rafa.cc, More Than a Race, you'll find their coverage there, and also on Twitter, hashtag More Than a Race.
Yeah, we're doing this live as live podcast today to capture some of the excitement of the time trial, because the excitement of a time trial is to see the results as they come in. Once it's all done and dusted and it's all written there in black and white on the result sheets, it becomes a little bit clinical, doesn't it? You see who's lost time and who's gained time. And of course, we will analyse that in the final part of this episode and weigh up the winners and losers. But the drama of the day really is in seeing the riders as they go through the checkpoints, and particularly as they hit the finish line. It's no secret, time trialing leaves me a little bit cold, but I do like a hilly or mountain time trial. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a bit different, isn't it? And today that question of what equipment to use has added a little bit of spice. I must say, Chris Froome, it looks very yellow with the yellow helmet and the yellow skin suit, but he looks very smooth as well. I think he's been working on his time trial position. He's pretty rock solid there. He looks, actually, I would say, more elegant on a time trial bike than he does on a road bike.
He does, yeah. I mean, well, on the tri-bars, he's forced to keep his elbows in a little bit, isn't he? Keep his elbows in completely. Just to clarify my position on time trialing before I can feel
that,
the tweet.
That's the tape running out there. a bit of interference there.
Oh, dear. No, the thing about time trialing, I don't disrespect it as a discipline. It's incredibly difficult. It's probably the hardest thing in cycling, because all these riders who are trying to get a result here are absolutely on the limit, and it's a supreme test of judgment, pacing, positioning, equipment choice. You know, there's so much that goes into it. But to I think the reason that I find it leaves me a bit cold is because you're always watching the same bit of scenery or the same bit of road. And I think I've realised that one of the joys of watching road racing, for me at least, is the changing landscape and the changing scenery. We happen to see the same fixed camera shots as they come around the same corners, and it just feels a little bit repetitive, that's all.
That was something I recorded just beyond the finish line there, Lionel. A few children calling for bidons as the rider came through desperately and feigning tears and all sorts when they didn't get their drink bottles. Some of the riders just almost pretended they didn't hear them. But I have to give a shout out to Heimer Zubeldia, who went around distributing bidons to as many children as he could. And I mentioned the Rafa More Than a Race series today. It ties in with that a little bit, because there's an article on the rafa.cc website on the publicity caravan, the Jolly Caravan, and all the origins of the publicity caravan, which dispenses lots of freebies. Nothing quite as coveted as a real bidon from the race, but yeah, it's certainly a feature of the tour, isn't it, the publicity caravan?
Yeah, let's not mince words. They throw out a load of tat, really, don't they? But it's one of the great sights of the tour. I mean, where else can you see an 8 foot high fiberglass pedaling chicken? I mean, words escape me.
That's, I would wager that nowhere else. Now, while we were pausing there, Lionel, Romain Bardet came in, and before we talk about him, because he did a very good ride, can you give us an update on the how did Mollema get on at that first checkpoint? Because I'm curious curious to know how Mollema will do today. He had a bit of a bad day yesterday.
Well, he's not off to a great start. He's 12th fastest at the first checkpoint after 6.5 kilometres, which includes a flat bit at the start. So maybe judging his effort, saving it a bit more for the climb.
But he does. He's on a road bike.
He is on a road bike, and he looks like he's going pretty hard there on that flat section. So we shall wait and see how he goes on as the climbing starts.
Quintana coming in?
Quintana coming into the finish, yeah. Nairo Quintana needs a decent ride in the next couple of days, I would suggest. Needs to rescue his tour, really, with a stage win. The podium, of course, not out of the question by a long chalk, but not riding as well as we had expected he would. And here, he's outside the time of Romain Bardet, so not a brilliant ride for him.
That was Quintana coming in. Yeah, I mean, Bardet's done a really good ride, actually, hasn't he?
He has, lying fourth on the finish line at the moment. The top four on the finish is Dumoulin, Aru, Port and Bardet.
That's unexpected from Aru, I would say. An extremely good ride by him as well.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, because they've been given the same time, Aru and Port. It'll come down to hundredths of a second. Not entirely sure whether the live results are sort out to that degree. So we'll wait and see in the wash up at the end who gets the nod there.
Well, after that breathless live reportage there from the time trial, we've been joined by Daniel Freep. Hello, Daniel.
How goes it?
Well, how goes it with you? How was your day?
It was quite serene and quite peaceful this morning at the start. Not too many fans there.
Life's good. Sensation's good.
Few interesting visitors. Bob Stapleton was there. Our old chum, Bob Stapleton. Former owner of HTC High Road.
Is he going to be here back. The next couple of days? Am I going to have to get a false moustache, false beard?
I think he might be here tomorrow. So, if you turn up in your trench coat with your Deer Stalker on. he was here just visiting in his capacity as, I think he's chairman of USAE Cycling, isn't he?
And president?
Chairman or president, can't remember. Anyway, he was here with some guests. Before anyone starts speculating about him coming back to the sport, he's not going to be doing that. He actually has a wheel business. He has invested in a carbon wheel making business. So that is the only capacity in which he's likely to be represented in the professional peloton in future. But he was catching up with some old pals, some old employees. Adam Hansen, he had a warm handshake with Adam Hansen. Rolf Aldag, of course, Dimension Data team manager, used to be team manager at HTC High Road. So yeah, that was the start, and the finish, it was just the usual bun fight, wasn't it? A terrible bun fight, the worst bun fight of the tour so far, and of course that's what my job generally consists of now on the tour.
Getting involved in bun fights. You're always at the front of the bun fight, Daniel. Everyone's fighting around you. Lionel, after we have caught our breath, we've now sat through the press conferences, give us the rundown. What were the results? What are the important numbers and placings today?
Well, barring disaster, Chris Froome has won the Tour de France. He's now 3:52.
Outrageous chap.
He's now 3:52 ahead of Bauke Mollema. But the real interesting thing for the next 2 days is the battle for the podium. There's not a lot to split second from sixth at the moment. Bauke Mollema 3:52 back, Adam Yates 4:16, Nairo Quintana 4:37, Romain Bardet 4:57, Richie Porte 5 minutes. Any of those could finish on the podium. And if Fabio Aru were to go wild on these final two Alpine stages, you never know, maybe third place is still a possibility for him. So the race behind Chris Froome is vibrant, but
clutching at straws, aren't we here? I mean, it's a bit like 2014 when we were very interested in the French battle for the podium, but when we're trying to manufacture some excitement about the minor placings, it's been a pretty one-sided contest, hasn't it?
It has, Rich, and in the absence of any major talking points, I've been thinking about the riders further down the general classification, and who has really had an excellent tour, who we didn't expect to be so prominent, and even there the cupboard is fairly bare. But I think Louis Meintjes has been terrific and flown under the radar and not really got the credit he's deserved, finishing, well, he's ninth at the moment. Sebastian Reichenbach for FDJ, he's 13th on general classification. I had a nice chat with him the other day, and not a rider I've spoken to before, very mild-mannered, softly spoken chap, French-speaking, from with a German name, from the French-speaking part of Switzerland. And another mention in dispatches should go to Skarbu Grame, the first Ethiopian to ride the Tour de France, riding for Lamprey. He's going to finish it. I had a quick chat with him this morning. He's riding with a couple of broken ribs, and he's pretty badly beaten up. I think he's going to make it to Paris. But as far as the general classification is concerned, yeah, it's a bit of a job, isn't it, to squeeze too much interest out of the battle for yellow, certainly.
Well, yeah, but the ride by Adam Yates has been really, really impressive, and he was very good again today in the time trial. He keeps saying he's not a good time trialist, but he put up a pretty creditable performance and is still in third place overall. And, you know, for a rider who's still eligible, well, he's comfortably in the white jersey, isn't he? That's a terrific performance.
It is a terrific performance, no question at all. And I think we keep kind of expecting him to have a bad day. He's been sort of talking up the possibility of that in a way of taking a bit of pressure off himself. But speaking of Adam Yates, let's play a little trailer from our friend's special that we produced last year. Lionel went up to Bury to see the twins, Simon and Adam Yates, and interview them together. They went to a local cafe. And I think the Adam Yates and the Simon Yates that we heard there was very different to the guys that we see at races, who are very focused, quite monosyllabic a lot of the time. They were very open and, you know, showed a great sense of humour and sense of fun. It was, as I say, a special last year. So if you want to become a friend of the podcast for last year, you still can. It's £5. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com. But let's hear a little clip from that interview that you did, Lionel.
We're just outside of Manchester, so if you go south, it gets pretty busy. But if you go north, you get into the countryside pretty quick. That's basically where we train around when we're here.
You got a speciality?
Wow. Probably spaghetti bolognese.
Do you look at terrain and kind of go, that's more of an Adam day, that's more of a Simon day?
Pros and cons. When we first turned pro, everyone was trying to like say Simon's the more punchy one and I'm the more like, you know, long steady climb. But there's no real difference really, is there? I mean, if you can climb good and you go uphill good and you do certain power, then yeah, it just all depends on the day really.
Become a friend of the podcast for 2016. For £10, you'll have access to our Friends Specials, 11 in-depth episodes that will take you even further inside the sport. All our Friends Specials are now available on your mobile device. Our 2015 Friends Specials are also still available for £5. To sign up, visit www.thecyclingpodcast.com.
So we heard there a little bit from the Simon and Adam Yates special that we produced last year, and you become, as you heard there, a friend of the podcast for £5 from last year, or for this year, a friend of the podcast for £10 at thecyclingpodcast.com. And we've released 8, I think, so far, 3 still to come, and they'll be coming over the next few months.
Just on Yates, I think the most impressive aspect of his ride has been the fact that he has not frittered any time whatsoever. And if you compare his Tour de France to, for example, Dan Martin's, Dan Martin has looked the equal of anyone in the mountains at times. Well, very often in this Tour de France, he's been climbing superbly. But then you look at general classification, and he's in 10th place, which really doesn't do him justice. However, the difference between him and Adam Yates is that Dan Martin has frittered seconds here and there on numerous occasions, and he has looked like the inexperienced rider.
He's also attacked more, though.
He's thrown those seconds away by trying to gain seconds or trying to animate the race. And I think one of the, I suppose, unfortunate things about the mountain stages so far is that the general classification riders haven't been going for a stage win at any point. And that completely changes the dynamic, doesn't it? Because if you were Dan Martin or even Luis Menques or, you know, Alejandro Valverde, suddenly attacking up the road, there's two dimensions to it. One, they're dangerous on the overall classification, but two, they tease out other riders who might go for the stage win. When the stage win's already disappeared up the road, there's very little incentive to make a move or do anything. And really, Dan Martin and I suppose Richie Port have been the only two that have, that have actually tried anything. But there's no incentive for them to do so.
There's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days about how poor this Tour de France has been as a spectacle. I think it's always a bit of a... It's always kind of symptomatic of a Tour de France that's not really lived up to people's hopes and expectations when the mountain stages are not really contested by general classification riders. I remember 2002 Tour de France, one of the worst I've seen, certainly, with Santiago Becerra and Michael Bugard winning mountain stages. And certainly that didn't go down as a particularly good Tour de France. You mentioned Alejandro Valverde. Just a quick thing on Alejandro Valverde. I've just been to get you chaps some beers, a couple of beers, Heineken in a can. We're not living in a lap of luxury here. In the shop, I bumped into the Movistar press officer, and he was also buying some Heineken. And I said, is that for yourself? And he said, no, it's for Alejandro Valverde.
End of the tour is now. A little point I made earlier while we were watching the time trial today, and I was commenting on the performance of Jon Izagirre, that he'd ridden extremely well, having not shown an awful lot in this race other than in the other time trial. And it prompted me to look up the results of the first time trial and just to look at how the Movistar riders performed there. You had Nelson Oliveira in third, Jon Izagirre eighth, Alejandro Valverde 15th. Now these should have all been key helpers for Quintana. When you compare that to how the Sky riders performed in that time trial, they were all well down in the 40s and 50s, apart from Geraint Thomas and, of course, Chris Froome. And it's just symptomatic, I think, of a team that's come here where these guys are riding to their own agenda.
I think the clear agenda now is the team classification. And
yeah, but
Movistar have always shown a lot of interest.
That's the first stage. That's the first time trial, I mean.
But I think...
But it was evident again today.
They've always shown great interest, maybe even an unhealthy, unhelpful interest in the team classification.
Which nobody really cares
about. No. I was chatting to a colleague of ours, Lionel Chamy from Le Parisien, this morning in the Start Village, and we're talking about Movistar's tactics, and he said, Froome against Quintana is like Froome against Pulidor. It's no contest.
Well, Eddie Merckx was here today as a guest, and he was asked about Froome, and Matt Rendell, actually, a colleague of ours, asked him whether he might, you know, be compared with the great Eddie Merckx, and Merckx said, well, for sure, he is as good as Eddie Merckx at the stage races, but I raced all year round, kind of thing, was basically what he said. He won 525 races, didn't he? Whereas, you know, that's been the trend for many years now, that you know, there's more of a focus on the Tour de France. Should we wrap things up there? Anything more to add? Daniel? You look thoughtful, pensive, staring into the distance.
I'm trying to think if there's anything.
We've got a live event tonight, haven't we, Lionel? Yeah, punching the air. We are staying at Chalet
La Giettez, and we were invited, over the winter, we were invited to spend these 3 days in the Alps there because it's the ideal location for us. It's on the Col des Aravis. It's a chalet. It's fantastic views. We arrived in the dark last night, but when we woke up this morning and had a look at where it's situated, it's pretty breathtaking, isn't it? And we're there this evening with paying guests, I gather, are going to come and watch us talk about the Tour de France. Extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. It's a beautiful spot, billed as a writers and cyclists retreat. It really is. It's stunningly beautiful. Because not everywhere in the Alps is beautiful. Some places are a little bit overdeveloped.
I saw clues.
Really?
Yeah.
Daniel parked up
signed
there
today. Where were we staying? Salonche. And it's not far from Clues, and I've not very fond memories
happy
of Clues
man,
from the
memories.
Dauphiné. Anyway.
We got a Facebook message from a friend of the podcast. I'm just looking up to see if I can find it here. Complaining that we were a bit negative last night, Lionel, about, you know, various mishaps and challenges that befell us. I have to say that, you know, it's brilliant being here. We love being at the Tour de France, but there are days when it's quite hard work and you're a bit tired.
Did you hear that some team buses got stuck for 3 hours in the tunnel? That was, well, I think it was almost custom made for the evacuation off the mountaintop finish yesterday. And I think a some team buses certainly got stopped for a very long time.
Yeah, and the Swiss police were explaining to me that the reason they couldn't
Swiss
just send...
Swiss police were explaining to me.
They were.
Was that a private audience with the...
I had an audience with the Swiss police, all terribly innocent. No, they were marshalling the road junction. But there was some rule about how many vehicles could be in the tunnel, and they were very, very anxious not to allow the traffic to back up into the tunnel. And so they were only letting vehicles in batches. And I think the team buses that were trying to get down that way were held not in the tunnel but before the tunnel for quite a long time. They'd all gone by the time we got back to the press room, but to be perfectly honest, the whole setup there, the Tour de France was way too big for that tiny little place. And
it was a mess,
it was a mess.
A failed experiment, I would say. I mean, Christian Prudhomme did say before yesterday's stage that it was a bit of a gamble to go to Finot-Émosson because of the logistical challenges that it presented, and I don't think it really paid off.
I would counter that by saying that everyone who watched it on TV has commented about how stunning it looked, and really our needs are pretty low down the list of priorities. If it takes us a long time to get off the mountain, you know, that's not really high up Christian Prudhomme's list of priorities, is it? But the teams being inconvenienced won't have gone down too well.
No, indeed. Well, let's go, because we've got to go to do our live event. We're going to Facebook Live it. That means
Periscope.
Not Periscope. Why not? It'll sit on Facebook. It'll sit there for forever, in perpetuity. We'll be there with. We're going to be joined by Kayleigh Fretz and Andy Hood. Do you want to come along, Daniel? Too late.
I thought you Periscope everything these days in my absence.
No, because. Periscope only lasts, I think, for 24 hours. It was David Birch, the friend of the podcast, who emailed us. David, we take your comments on board, but we reserve the right to be a little bit irritated some days.
Yeah, I don't think we were grumbling about being here, but logistics.
Poor attitude. He accuses us of poor attitude.
Wow. I mean, that's an accusation that could be levelled at me on any given day.
Yeah, me too, to be fair.
He does describe himself as a friend of the podcast, owner of the Tour is the Tour t-shirt, and owner of various books, What You Have Wrote. He said, so that's nice. So we forgive you, David, for your curt email, but it's noted, and we'll remember that, and we'll put on a brave face in the future. Thanks very much, Daniel, for joining us tonight.
Of course.
Thanks, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Daniel.
Did you chaps ever get... round to trying to rubella in Switzerland?
No, I didn't.
Bah. Yeah, but you said it was made of eggs, and no, it's made of whey.
Milk.
Daniel and Lionel did enjoy you being pulled up for an error. He did enjoy that. Daniel's screwing up his face
up,
like
always
a petulant child.
I must admit, I did punch the air at that. But no, I saw it in a petrol station, a bottle of rubella, and I thought, no, it's a funny colour. I'm not sure about it. So I went for some water instead.